Welcome in to another episode of We're Talking. Today we're talking baseball, Sunbelt Conference baseball, with Danny Reed, voice of the Georgia Southern Eagles, and Jay Walker, voice of the UL Raging Cajuns. How are you tonight, Danny?
Boys, I'm doing well. Good to see you guys.
Good to be seen. It's been a long weekend in the sun. Jay and yourself, you survived?
I did. I survived, made it back in one piece from Mobile and celebrating National Whatever Day.
It's National Whiskey Day, so we're having a warm one, I guess, would be the proper, because we drink it neat. So, but Danny, how, before we get talking about baseball though, let's talk to me about doing a game by yourself and having to do a doubleheader. Because I can tell you, listening to Jay and Bab this weekend, Bab got very quiet in the second game, and Jay kind of slowed down himself. How do you handle that in the booth by yourself?
Oh, okay, a couple things. One, Jay, I didn't know that Bab was going to be with you. I didn't find that out until today. Good on you. Two, this is the second one we've had this year. We had the one with Rutgers, which the back end kind of told itself, because that's the game that Georgia Southern got no hit. Not really a great reason to have something to talk about in the second game, but still, when you're on the air for that long, you're looking for anything you can. But I mean, even this past weekend in Hattiesburg, weather made sure that we were going to play the three games in 2 days with the doubleheader on Saturday. Near the tail end of game one, you've got the fight that breaks out at home plate after Southern Miss hits the go-ahead home run. So that provided a little bit of firepower for the next couple of innings. And then as Southern Miss came back to win game one late, Georgia Southern came back to win game two late. And Jay Thompson, who was the losing pitcher in game one, came back to be the winning pitcher in game two. So thankfully, stuff like that happened to make it easier to tie together. Otherwise, you're just starting to count the ceiling tiles and just never-ending effort to tie your shoes, or just how many times or different ways can you twiddle your thumbs?
Jay, this is, well, not a new experience for you. You've had somebody in the booth for a while, but the majority of your time, you were by yourself. What about yourself when you were doing it?
Right about the middle of game two is usually when I would hit the wall, and it would be like, okay, let me, during the commercial break, let me pick up these papers and see if there's anything worth talking about. Oh, nope, nothing there. Let's go ahead and go to this. And then it's, you know, then you just start talking about what time the games are in the coming week and all that other stuff. And every once in a while, something will happen and it will remind you of something else that's happened. And you can tell a story. Unfortunately, that doesn't happen enough when you're doing games by yourself.
Well, Danny, let's just jump right into the fire. Georgia Southern heads to Southern Miss, and this is the first time in program history that the two met. And I tell you, it's one that I think both fans will remember for a long time. So
yeah, they might have taken two of the three, but everybody that watched it felt that it was a pretty evenly matched series. Look, they jumped out by four runs in the first two games, but to Georgia Southern's credit, they came back. They just kept fighting, kept coming back. It reminded me a lot of what made the 2022 team really good, was that they never stayed down. Oftentimes, they would come back and win. I mean, they led the country in comeback wins last year. This team is starting to unpack a little bit of that with somewhat of a different cast. But the week begins, I'll go back a couple of days, in Macon on Wednesday against Mercer, Eagles got down 4-0 going into the third. They scored five times. They got down 7-5 going into the seventh. They had another five-run inning. Sammy Blancato bounces a double off the first base bag on a ball that looked more like a cue shot to the corner pocket than it did a baseball hit, but it hit the bag, jumped over their first baseman. Two runs came in, held Mercer off by one. Game one against Southern Miss actually got interrupted by rain, so there was a 53-minute delay. They took Tanner Hall out, thankfully, because he struck out 10 and 5 and a third. Georgia Southern stuck with Ty Fisher, so he threw all eight innings, even though he didn't throw a pitch for over an hour. But got down 4-0, scored three to cut it to one, and then Jesse Sherrill flies one to the wall with two outs that Reese Ewing catches. Really awkward-looking catch, because he kind of overran it, and if he doesn't catch it, Sherrill's at least at third with a chance to, at minimum, tie the game with Jarrett Brown coming up. But then you come back on Saturday, they build a 6-2 lead. Blancato again, two-run double to right center, up 7-6. Then Slade Wilkes comes up with two on, two out in the eighth. He homers off of Jay Thompson. And look, there was no doubt it was a 430-footer right center field. It was a bomb, 100 and some miles off the bat. But bat gets flipped. As he's circling the bases, the warning is issued as to say, look, that's enough. We've had all this. And then something transpired from the time he crossed the plate to him getting back to the dugout. Because there were multiple players involved on both sides. Ultimately, there was a fracas that broke out. It didn't take that long to get separated. They ended up ejecting Wilkes for Southern Miss, Kyler Holker, and Georgia Southern's catcher, who was on video. He did make contact with a Golden Eagle, but the video didn't exactly show the full story where this was a Southern Miss-initiated fight. I mean, you can call it a fight, but it was more or less just a what for and all this and what
that. Baseball fight.
A baseball fight. No real punches thrown, no blood, no jerseys torn, nothing like that. But when the umpires decided who they were going to toss, Slade Wilkes gets ejected for Southern Miss. Holtgren gets ejected for Georgia Southern. So he flips because he felt that he wasn't in the wrong. He was just the one that got pushed back. So he was responding. Still, though, since contact was made, he got tossed. And then in all of this, they realized that Wilkes should not have been the one that got ejected. Because Sun Belt Conference rule is, you get ejected, you miss the next game. Wilkes returned for the next game, and we looked around at what's going on here, find out that his ejection was overturned because it wasn't he that was directly involved in the initial pushing. So they changed it so he could start. They re-put it on Fowler, the pinch runner, which was right because he was the one most involved along with Dickerson, but Fowler is the one that served the ejection. Holgren had to serve his, and Georgia Southern at that point was already down a catcher because J.D. Kaiser got hit on a couple of backswings on Friday in game one, so he was unavailable for Saturday, and not sure what his availability is going to be for this week either. So they were in the bag a little bit with J.P. Tighe having to come in to catch the last little bit of game one and then catch all of game two. But once it got sorted out, things were fine. There didn't seem to be any bad blood. There was no extra animosity. Southern Miss hung on to one game one, and then Georgia Southern came back. They led for a majority of game two, but did trail 8-7 going into the ninth. Noah Ledford had already homered in the seventh inning for the lead. He homers again to lead off the ninth. Blancato again with two outs, two-run homer. It was 10-8. And then Jay Thompson got the final outs on the double play. And it felt like it was a really important win. You go out of town 12-12. You're coming back 4-2. But in terms of a regular season win, less than halfway through the season, that felt like a really important game for that team to get.
You know, I'm going to go ahead and say this, and there are going to be people that are going to disagree because, after all, players are just having fun. But I'm just here to tell you, when umpires start ejecting players for bat flips, all of this stuff's going to go away. I mean, it's that simple.
Because
every time in a tight game, if somebody hits a home run and does a bat flip, the other team is going to be very put off by it, and there's going to be some sort of retaliation. Either there's going to be something verbal as the guy goes around the bases and maybe after he crosses home plate, or maybe the next time he gets a fastball in the ass. I'm just telling you that when umpires and conference commissioners say, okay, enough of this stuff, and they take away some of the showboating that goes on when a home run is hit, and they start throwing guys out because of it, and they got to sit out the next game, you're going to see guys hit the ball a long way, drop the bat, and run to first base. And, isn't that the way we used to do it?
What killed me about the whole thing was that while it was a great home run, the place went nuts. It was the bottom of the eighth inning. It was not a walk-off home run. I could at least understand a little bit if you won the game, celebrate. Let your emotions show. I can deal with that to a degree, but this is still the bottom of the eighth inning. Georgia Southern had one more at bat. To have an instance like that where it felt that Southern Miss had accomplished the goal of winning the game, and then it escalated to something and unfortunately shouldn't have, and then both teams lose a player, and for Georgia Southern, it was their starting catcher and their healthiest catcher at that point. And to think that they still won the second game with that being the case, it made it that much more impressive. But I do agree with you, until this gets policed a little bit further, but then you got to toe the line, okay, is this creating more bad than good? You got to let guys have fun. You've got to let them play. You've got to let them show out. but you've got to be able to draw the line as to say, is this one more harm than good?
Why do you have to do that? Now look, okay, and I say this all the time. I come from a different generation of baseball. I do, and I admit that. But you know what? Up until the last, what, 6, 7, 8 years, you didn't see a bunch of bat flips when a guy hit a home run. And so you can say, well, you got to let them have fun, but does it have to be that kind of fun? I mean, I'm sorry. Drop the bat, run the bases, and don't do what Danny Lynch did a couple of years ago and take a month to get around the bases.
And I do agree with you on that. I think that it has gotten a little bit excessive, but that's what I mean, where what is defined as letting guys enjoy the moment as opposed to showing up the opponent. There is still a measure of sportsmanship that needs to exist regardless of how big the home run is.
Yeah, and I think that's where baseball, at least in the major league level, will police itself. But do you think it's worse because that you guys were in the first base dugout? If you're in the third base dugout, does it look as bad?
I think it depends on what the video shows. And from what people watched on the E-Plus broadcast, it painted a different situation than what actually went down. And I was debating on whether or not to ask Rodney about it on our in-between show after game one, because we get him on the field after every game. And I asked him during the break, I said, are you okay telling me what you can tell me about what went down? He said, no, I'll tell you exactly what happened. So I just said, unfortunately, the way the game ended, what can you share with us about the situation that came up? He said exactly what I just told you about how this was not initiated by Georgia Southern. This was more of a Southern Miss deal. And that's why Kyler Holmgren reacted the way that he did when he found out he was one of the ones that got tossed. And even worse, when the decision that was initially made was incorrect because a player got a chance to come back and the guy that did not start it still had to serve his ejection because he was simply retaliating. And anybody else would have done the same in that situation.
You know, the school in our league that has the reputation of getting really chippy and running their mouth is Texas State. Okay. It's a reputation they've earned. And I don't say that to be derogatory. I'm just saying what it is. They played Southern Miss last weekend and had three really competitive games. Now, we know that Southern Miss can get a little chippy too, as we found out yesterday and as I learned a couple of years ago. Texas State's got a very good program. So does Southern Miss.
Yep.
I'm surprised that things didn't get a little out of hand last week. Because look, they got after each other. There was some late inning drama and yeah. So, you know, we'll keep an eye on both of those schools.
You know,
you got to see both of them still.
That's right. That's right. And the final two weekends of the season, as a matter of fact.
Oh, wow.
You know what bothers me more than bat flips, though? And this is going to be my old man get off my porch thing. But I'm sorry. Those players that wear their pants above their knees and pull their socks above their knees should be shot as soon as they step on the field. They should not be allowed on the field. Shot? And any coach that allows their player on the field with like that should be immediately executed as well. I think there should be an electric chair there at home plate. Wow. You come out to bat, boom, sock it, baby.
Wow.
Yes, it's my old man, get off my board. But it looks ridiculous. And my favorite player in MLB right now, Jonathan India, does it. And I just want to say you look ridiculous. All right, now that we've got that through, Texas State Coastal, Danny, if you would have told me Coastal would have scored 40 runs and I would have said, who did they play? XYZ, ABC, but not Texas State. What did you get? Did you get the chance to peek in on that at all?
I always have a trouble with Coastal at the beginning of every season because I just don't know how good they are since they play so many games at home. I just don't know how good they are out of the gate. But when you realize that, one, Levi Wells got bumped up to pitch the first game. And two, they were up 13-0 after the third inning of that first game. Okay, well, there's still two-thirds of that game, and there's two more games that weekend. But that park is conducive to a lot of offense, as we've talked about before. But even that seemed to be – that was pretty noteworthy.
Well, you know, I think we made the comment last week, talked about how is Texas State going to handle the long trip. You know, if you bus it, it's 20 hours. Obviously, they didn't do that. But it's a trip that's like 1,300 miles. And you wonder how they were going to handle it. And the answer was not very well. Now, they managed to come back and get game three. But by that time, by the time the ninth inning of game two rolled around, Coastal had outscored Texas State 32-1. Texas State got five in the ninth inning to make it a 10-6 or 13-6 final score. But it was 32-1 after the first 17 innings of baseball. Now, you know, we can say all we want to about Coastal, and they play at home and they play in a ballpark that's conducive to hitting. That's pretty damn impressive. And they've been doing this really all year. I mean, you may remember earlier in the season, they played Wake Forest, who's ranked number two in the country. And I want to say they put 15 on them.
Yeah, they the one-on-one.
They're scoring a ton of runs. Now, they're also giving up some runs. But, you know, and I'm going to be interested to see when they come to Lafayette in a few weeks how they're going to handle a ballpark that doesn't play like a hitter's ballpark and may have winds coming out of the south and blowing in. I'll be interested to see. But you know what? If you're capable of scoring 32 runs in two games, you probably can hit on Mars.
It seems like this team is what we expected Coastal to be coming into the league. Remember, last year they were a little different. They were very blue-collar. They were dirtbaggy in a good way. They were grinders. They made you earn everything. They just played harder than you, and it was very atypical of a Coastal team since they won the College World Series. This seems like a team that goes back to maybe that 2019 squad where they had a Zach Bierman who hit, 18 home runs in the tournament the one year and helped them win it in Conway. It seems like they're trending more back to that, but maybe they can still have a little bit of the trappings of what they did in 22 when they ended up going to the regional in Greenville.
I know this is one of the games we didn't talk about last week, but Georgia State and App State. I think Georgia State is playing like they've done the last, or at least last year, hot at the beginning of conference. But at the same time, I don't, at least for myself, I didn't expect App State to be playing this well so far. What were your thoughts on their weekend series?
I figured that they would split the first two and they would play for the rubber. I did not anticipate App coming back from 8-0 down in the third game to win 15-14.
That's 29 runs for App State. That's a lot of runs. And I don't know how – I'm assuming they were playing – I think Marshall is playing their conference games at the minor league.
Well, no, this was against Georgia State that this happened.
Sorry.
And they were playing at Smith Stadium in Boone.
Yeah, it was in Boone.
Now, Smith Stadium, as far as dimensions go, it's a pretty big ballpark. App State, and I've been following them pretty closely. This is easily the best offensive team that App State has had since they joined the Sun Belt Conference. I don't even think it's close.
Absolutely, now, it is.
I think after their first guy on Friday night, I think that their pitching is very suspect. But this is a team that's scoring runs. They got a guy who's already hit like 9 or 10 bombs this year, and they have shown a propensity to be able to come from behind and win games that turn out to be slugfests. So that part of App State has really impressed me. Now, they haven't pitched very well, and they have not played very good defense. But they have swung the bat better than any App State team we've seen so far.
And that makes me think that not only is it the best they've been offensively, but probably the first time that you'd be safe saying that they don't have to worry about being a bottom four seed.
You know what? I'll be surprised if they are, of course, depending on health and all that good stuff. But they've shown me right now a propensity to really be able to come out and score runs. And, They're only taking 10, okay? Right. Four of them are sitting at home. I don't think App State's going to be one of them.
Jay, did you I don't want to go into it long, but did you jinx Arkansas State after saying last week that they had not had a rainout in the beginning of the season?
I know. I know. I thought about that, as a matter of fact, when all of that stuff was going down.
Why you hate Arkansas State?
And that they had not had a game postponed or canceled because of weather, despite the fact that they played the majority of their games at home. But, yeah, they got rained out twice. They only got to play one game. And, you know, 9-4 was the final, but 9-4 was the final in 10 innings. They actually went extra innings, but dropped their ninth straight game. And, you know, we saw this happen to A-State last year. I still think they're a better club than they were a year ago. But, yeah. Yeah, that's 9 in a row.
Danny, did you get a chance to see any of that since you were off on Sunday, or were you still traveling?
No, that's a long trip back from Hattiesburg. I'll say that. But the start of the series, when we knew that they weren't going to play Friday and then thought about only one Saturday, but conditions and weather wasn't going to happen. And then to see that not only did it go 10, but they had to come back from 4-1 down late to get to the 10th, and then only to see them score 5. I hate it for that program anytime I see the struggles like that. And it seems like they have a streak like this almost every year where it's at least a couple of weeks where they go without a win. You know how much we think of Tommy Rappo and the program that he has built. But at the same time, with a new AD now, is there a chance that a new direction is expected? They've always talked about improving the Tom. They've talked about adding softball. Are these things that finally happen, or do they get hot like anybody certainly can be with 2 months left in the season?
Well, that's a good question, because one of the things that we've always said about Arkansas State is if you're going to get them before tax day.
Yep.
Because the second part of April and into May, this team starts scoring a lot of runs. They start hitting the ball really well. Their pitching gets a little bit better because the climate is better. And then they go out and start beating people. Now, we waited for that to happen last year, and it never did. Yeah. And so we'll see if it happens this year. I still think they're a better club than they were a year ago, based on what I saw when they came to Russo Park. But, you know, James Madison is one of those teams that I have a question. Are they going to finish in the top 10? And so I thought Arkansas State had a chance to do something this weekend. They play just one game and they drop it next innings.
Yeah, that's tough.
Lastly, before we move on to next week's or this week's schedule, I guess it is. If you would have told me South Alabama scores 23 runs over 3 games, I would have told you the Cajuns would have got swept. But if I would have told you that the Cajuns would score 43 runs over 3 games, that they would have swept. And neither one of those things happened. Jay, you were there, so was I, but you probably remember more than I do because I was sitting in stands drinking beer.
I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It should have been a sweep. You know, you had a 6-run lead going into the bottom of the 7th in game 1. You had a 4-run lead going into the bottom of the 8th, and you had the guy who leads you in saves coming out to the mound. And then he walks the bases loaded. Now you have to come with Moody a full inning before you wanted to. And the and 3 inherited runs scored, and then he gives up 2 in the 8th. So it was a very disappointing loss. It was a game that the Cajuns had in hand with 2 good arms. And Marshall, who did not pitch on Tuesday or Wednesday, so he was well rested. Maybe that was part of the problem because it looked like he was overthrowing a little bit. But that's a game they should have won. It's a game that I think stuck in the fans' craw, those that were back here in Lafayette and those that were in Mobile. To their credit, they came out and just took it all out on South Alabama the next day, you know, outscoring them 32-11 in the 2 games. And even though you sweep a doubleheader, so therefore you get on the bus feeling good about yourself, the reality of the situation is they should have won all 3.
Danny, I know in your position, like we talked about, you're probably tired and and you guys were in your middle of your own doubleheader. But I know you follow all the games closely. Did you have any thoughts on that weekend?
I'll be honest with you. I was out at dinner with our hitting coach, Cody Wofford, who at one time was an assistant for Mark Calvey at South, and we were following up until the top of the eighth inning, and we finished up and went home. And at that point, it was still a three-run game. And then to get back to the hotel and pull up the score and realize that South Alabama won, and you want to wonder how. And pulling up the play-by-play and then seeing some of the highlights, the two-out, two-run triple was enormous for them because otherwise they're 0-6 in league play with South Alabama. That's a tough pill for them to swallow. And then the go-ahead single and then to finish it up in the ninth is one of their biggest wins of the season. But then you lose a little bit of the luster when the doubleheader the next day goes as sideways as it did.
Let me ask you a question, Danny. And of course, you know, I'd love to say that they're closer to you geographically, but really the only thing they are is in the same time zone. Okay. I'm looking at Old Dominion's scores the last 2 weeks. In week one, they have to go extra innings in a 2-2 game to beat ULM. And then they score a gazillion runs the last two games. They lose to Marshall in game one, scoring only two runs, and then they score a gazillion runs the last two games.
Yeah.
I don't know what to make of that. I don't, because this is a team that's been scoring a boatload of runs, but it's not like Marshall and ULM have these overpowering Friday night guys.
Yeah, but what Marshall's guy did was throw 130 pitches. And this early in the season, really at any point in the season, that's a lot of pitches for somebody to even think about, eight innings worth. It tells me that if they're facing quality arms, then you can get them to a degree. Good pitching can get good hitting, but then they show you how good that they are when the quality of the arm may drop just a little bit. And I think that playing those two teams that they did helps prove that. But if you face somebody that's got some depth, especially from Saturday on, maybe it's a little bit closer to Friday than it is the bombs away that you've seen the last two games, the last two weekends.
And the only series we didn't mention, Troy, after getting swept and getting pounded in week one, they come back at home. They defeat ULM 7-5, 7-5, and 4-3.
Any surprise there? I mean, I know ULM, they're 0-6 in league play, but at the same time, Troy's been blowing people out.
Well, I think that we would all agree that regardless of who is leading that program, the out-of-conference schedules have never really been that strong. They never have been. They never have been.
Well, that's why I couldn't figure out their RPI a couple weeks ago being 7 or last week being 7 or 8. I'm going, where is that coming from? And that might have been Old Dominion's, but they were in the top 20 of RPI. And it's still just – I'm like, who have they played to deserve that?
Yeah, part of it is that you need to keep winning and winning and winning. You need to dominate every – well, maybe not dominate, but you need to just keep winning those games that eventually the numbers will start to go in your favor. But you drop just a little bit. I think they were 11-0 and they lost the two midweek games to Florida Gulf Coast. That's a really good program. They're probably going to win the A-Sun this year. But just a little bit of a slip like that and what you thought was a good situation quickly turns into staring closer to 100 than being closer to 50.
And I think Coach Deggs talked about that in his scheduling philosophy now moving forward. Teams at home.
Well, I think the difference in scheduling this year for the Cajuns, first of all, they've front-loaded a bunch of home games. But the other thing is this. He did a lot of research, and it showed that the selection committee wasn't nearly as worried about what your number was with the RPI as they were about your record against Quad 3 and Quad 4 teams. So if you're playing a bunch of Quad 4 teams and you're playing Quad 4 teams that you're going to beat, it's a whole lot better than playing a couple of those schools from the Southland that are quad four teams, but that are good enough to beat you.
Yeah.
And so I think that's kind of been the philosophy. Now, they lost a game to McNeese, a midweek game to McNeese. You know, as it turns out, you know, South Alabama, that's right now a quad four loss. But you don't have any control about who you play in the league, only who you play out of league. So you can go ahead and you can play some quad fours, but you better beat them.
Danny, any last thoughts on this weekend before we take a quick break and move on to this coming week?
I don't know if we brought it up this specifically last week, but we're not going to know exactly what any of the teams in this league have until we get to at least May. But you get little rewards along the way as to say, okay, this is what your team could be. This is what they're capable of. And it might be a big comeback. It might be taking the back end of a doubleheader where you lost the first game. You might be a couple of guys down. Somebody steps up, whether it's a pitcher, starter, bullpen, or whether it's somebody on offense that just it decides to click. But the little victories along the way, whether it's in the midweek or in conference play, those are the things that you always take note of, because by the end of the season, that adds up. And you figure out, okay, are we really a team that is somebody that can be reckoned with in the postseason, or did we just have a decent season?
Jay, any last thoughts on this past weekend?
No, not really. I want the sample size to get bigger before I get to the point where I'm ready to make any judgments about this league, although I've already made a couple. But I want to see a little bit more. I want to see a bit more. You know, we found out during basketball season that if you're good enough to go win on the road, then you're probably good enough to win the league. You look at what has gone on so far in the Sun Belt, okay? You've got Texas State's 13-4 at home. They're 3-4 on the road. Troy is 15-3 at home, 2-4 on the road. Georgia State is 10-3 at home. They're 4-7 on the road. So teams that can win away from home are probably going to be some of your higher seeded teams when it's time to start playing in Montgomery, Alabama.
All right. You've been listening to We're Talking. We've been talking baseball, Sunbelt Conference baseball, with Danny Reed, voice of the Georgia Southern Eagles, and Jay Walker, voice of the UL Raging Cajuns. We'll be right back after this brief timeout. Welcome in to another episode of We're Talking. Today we're talking baseball, Sunbelt Conference baseball, with Danny Reed, voice of the Georgia Southern Eagles, and Jay Walker, voice of the UL Raging Cajuns. How are you tonight, Danny?
Boys, I'm doing well. Good to see you guys.
Good to be seen. It's been a long weekend in the sun. Jay, and yourself, you survived?
I did. I survived, made it back in one piece from Mobile and celebrating National Whatever Day.
It's National Whiskey Day, so we're having a warm one, I guess, would be the proper, because we drink it neat. So, but Danny, how, before we get talking about baseball though, let's talk to me about doing a game by yourself and having to do a doubleheader. Because I can tell you, listening to Jay and Bab this weekend, Bab got very quiet in the second game and Jay kind of slowed down himself. How do you handle that in the booth by yourself?
Oh, okay, a couple things. One, Jay, I didn't know that Bab was going to be with you. I didn't find that out until today. Good on you. Two, this is the second one we've had this year. We had the one with Rutgers, which the back end kind of told itself, because that's the game that Georgia Southern got no hit. Not really a great reason to have something to talk about in the second game, but still, when you're on the air for that long, you're looking for anything you can. But even this past weekend in Hattiesburg, weather made sure that we were going to play the three games in 2 days with the doubleheader on Saturday. Near the tail end of game one, you've got the fight that breaks out at home plate after Southern Miss hits the go-ahead home run. So that provided a little bit of firepower for the next couple of innings. And then as Southern Miss came back to win game one late, Georgia Southern came back to win game two late. And Jay Thompson, who was the losing pitcher in game one, came back to be the winning pitcher in game two. So thankfully stuff like that happened to make it easier to tie together. Otherwise, you're just starting to count the ceiling tiles and just never-ending effort to tie your shoes, or just how many times or different ways can you twiddle your thumbs?
Jay, this is, well, not a new experience for you. You've had somebody in the booth for a while, but the majority of your time you were by yourself. How What about yourself when you were doing it?
It you know, right about the middle of game two is usually when I would hit the wall, and it would be like, okay, let me, during the commercial break, let me pick up these papers and see if there's anything worth talking about. Oh, nope, nothing there. Let's go ahead and go to this. And then it's, you know, then you just start talking about what time the games are in the coming week and all of that other stuff. And every once in a while, something will happen and it will remind you of something else that's happened. And you can tell a story. Unfortunately, that doesn't happen enough when you're doing games by yourself.
Well, Danny, let's just jump right into the fire. Georgia Southern heads to Southern Miss, and this is the first time in program history that the two met. And I tell you, it's one that I think both fans will remember for a long time. So
yeah, they might have taken two of the three, but everybody that watched it felt that it was a pretty evenly matched series. Look, they jumped out by four runs in the first two games, but to Georgia Southern's credit, they came back. They just kept fighting, kept coming back. It reminded me a lot of what made the 2022 team really good was that they never stayed down. Oftentimes, they would come back and win. I mean, they led the country in comeback wins last year. This team is starting to unpack a little bit of that with somewhat of a different cast, but the week begins, I'll go back a couple of days, in Macon on Wednesday against Mercer, Eagles got down 4-0 going into the third. They scored five times. They got down 7-5 going into the seventh. They had another five-run inning. Sammy Blancato bounces a double off the first base bag on a ball that looked more like a cue shot to the corner pocket than it did a baseball hit, but it hit the bag, jumped over their first baseman. Two runs came in, held Mercer off by one. Game one against Southern Miss actually got interrupted by rain, so there was a 53-minute delay. They took Tanner Hall out, thankfully, because he struck out 10 and 5 and a third. Georgia Southern stuck with Ty Fisher, so he threw all eight innings, even though he didn't throw a pitch for over an hour. But got down 4-0, scored three to cut it to one, and then Jesse Sherrill flies one to the wall with two outs that Reese Ewing catches. Really awkward-looking catch because he kind of overran it, and if he doesn't catch it, Sherrill's at least at third with a chance to, at minimum, tie the game with Jared Brown coming up. But then you come back on Saturday, they build a 6-2 lead. Blancato again, two-run double to right center, up 7-6. Then Slade Wilkes comes up with two on, two out in the eighth. He homers off of Jay Thompson, and look, there was no doubt it was a 430-footer right center field. It was a bomb, 100 and some miles off the bat. But bat gets flipped. As he's circling the bases, the warning is issued as to say, look, that's enough. We've had all this. And then something transpired from the time he crossed the plate to him getting back to the dugout, because there were multiple players involved on both sides. Ultimately, there was a fracas that broke out. It didn't take that long to get separated. They ended up ejecting Wilkes for Southern Miss, Kyler Holker, and Georgia Southern's catcher, who was on video. He did make contact with a Golden Eagle, but the video didn't exactly show the full story, where this was a Southern Miss initiated fight. I mean, you can call it a fight, but it was more or less just a what for and all this and what
that. Baseball fight.
A baseball fight. No real punches thrown, no blood, no jerseys torn, nothing like that. But when the umpires decided who they were going to toss, Slade Wilkes gets ejected for Southern Miss. Holgren gets ejected for Georgia Southern. So he flips because he felt that he wasn't in the wrong. He was just the one that got pushed back, so he was responding. Still, though, since contact was made, he got tossed. And then in all of this, they realized that Wilkes should not have been the one that got ejected, because Sun Belt Conference rule is you get ejected, you miss the next game. Wilkes returned for the next game, and we looked around at what's going on here, find out that his ejection was overturned because it wasn't he that was directly involved in the initial pushing. So they changed it so he could start. They re-put it on Fowler, the pinch runner, which was right because he was the one most involved along with Dickerson, but Fowler is the one that served the ejection. Holgren had to serve his, and Georgia Southern at that point was already down a catcher because J.D. Kaiser got hit on a couple of backswings on Friday in game one, so he was unavailable for Saturday and not sure what his availability is going to be for this week either. So they were in the bag a little bit, with J.P. Tighe having to come in to catch the last little bit of game one and then catch all of game two. But once it got sorted out, things were fine. There didn't seem to be any bad blood. There was no extra animosity. Southern Miss hung on to one game one, and then Georgia Southern came back. They led for a majority of game two, but did trail 8-7 going into the ninth. Noah Ledford had already homered in the seventh inning for the lead. He homers again to lead off the ninth. Blancato again with two outs, two-run homer. It was 10-8. And then Jay Thompson got the final outs on the double play. And it felt like it was a really important win. You go out of town 12-12. You're coming back 4-2. But in terms of a regular season win, less than halfway through the season, that felt like a really important game for that team to get.
You know, I'm going to go ahead and say this, and there are going to be people that are going to disagree because, after all, players are just having fun. But I'm just here to tell you, when umpires start ejecting players for bat flips, all of this stuff's going to go away. I mean, it's that simple.
Probably
because,
so.
Because every time in a tight game, if somebody hits a home run and does a bat flip, the other team is going to be very put off by it, and there's going to be some sort of retaliation. Either there's going to be something verbal as the guy goes around the bases and maybe after he crosses home plate, or maybe the next time he gets a fastball in the ass. I'm just telling you that when umpires and conference commissioners say, okay, enough of this stuff, And they take away some of the showboating that goes on when a home run is hit, and they start throwing guys out because of it, and they got to sit out the next game, you're going to see guys hit the ball a long way, drop the bat, and run to first base. And, isn't that the way we used to do it?
What killed me about the whole thing was that while it was a great home run, the place went nuts. It was the bottom of the eighth inning. It was not a walk-off home run. I could at least understand a little bit if you won the game, celebrate, let your emotions show. I can deal with that to a degree, but this is still the bottom of the eighth inning. Georgia Southern had one more at bat. To have an instance like that where it felt that Southern Miss had accomplished the goal of winning the game, and then it escalated to something and unfortunately shouldn't have, and then both teams lose a player, and for Georgia Southern it was their starting catcher and their healthiest catcher at that point. And to think that they still won the second game, with that being the case, it made it that much more impressive. But I do agree with you, until this gets policed a little bit further, but then you got to toe the line, okay, is this creating more bad than good? You got to let guys have fun. You've got to let them play. You've got to let them show out. But you've got to be able to draw the line as to say, is this doing more harm than good?
Why do you have to do that? Now look, okay, and I say this all the time. I come from a different generation of baseball. I do. And I admit that. But you know what? Up until the last, what, 6, 7, 8 years, you didn't see a bunch of bat flips when a guy hit a home run. And so you can say, well, you got to let them have fun. But does it have to be that kind of fun? I mean, I'm sorry. Drop the bat, run the bases. And don't do what Danny Lynch did a couple of years ago and take a month to get around the bases.
And I do agree with you on that. I think that it has gotten a little bit excessive, but that's what I mean, where what is defined as letting guys enjoy the moment as opposed to showing up the opponent. There is still a measure of sportsmanship that needs to exist regardless of how big the home run is.
Yeah, and I think that's where baseball, at least in the major league level, will police itself. But do you think it's worse because that you guys were in the first base dugout? If you're in the third base dugout, does it look as bad?
I think it depends on what the video shows. And from what people watched on the E-Plus broadcast, it painted a different situation than what actually went down. And I was debating on whether or not to ask Rodney about it on our in-between show after game one, because we get him on the field after every game. And I asked him during the break, I said, are you okay telling me what you can tell me about what went down? He said, no, I'll tell you exactly what happened. So I just said, unfortunately, the way the game ended, what can you share with us about the situation that came up? He said exactly what I just told you about, how this was not initiated by Georgia Southern. This was more of a Southern Miss deal. And that's why Kyler Holmgren reacted the way that he did when he found out he was one of the ones that got tossed. And even worse, when the decision that was initially made was incorrect because a player got a chance to come back and the guy that did not start it still had to serve his ejection because he was simply retaliating, and anybody else would have done the same in that situation.
You know, the school in our league that has the reputation of getting really chippy and running their mouth is Texas State. Okay, they've got it's a reputation they've earned, and I don't say that to be derogatory. I'm just saying what it is. They played Southern Miss last weekend and had three really competitive games. Now, we know that Southern Miss can get a little chippy too, as we found out yesterday and as I learned a couple of years ago. Texas State's got a very good program. So does Southern Miss.
Yep.
I'm surprised that things didn't get a little out of hand last week. Because look, they got after each other. There was some late inning drama, and so you know, we'll keep an eye on both of those schools.
You know,
you got to see both of them still.
That's right. And the final two weekends of the season, as a matter of fact.
Oh wow!
You know what bothers me more than bat flips, though, and this is going to be my old man get off my porch thing. But I'm sorry, those players that wear their pants above their knees and pull their socks above their knees should be shot as soon as they step on the field. They should not be allowed on the field. Shot? And any coach that allows their player on the field with like that should be immediately executed as well. I think there should be an electric chair there at home plate. Wow. You come out to bat, boom, sock it, baby.
Wow.
Yes, it's my old man, get off my board. But it looks ridiculous. And my favorite player in MLB right now, Jonathan India, does it. And I just want to say you look ridiculous. All right, now that we've got that through, Texas State Coastal, Danny. If you would have told me Coastal would have scored 40 runs and I would have said, who did they play? XYZ, ABC, but not Texas State. What did you get? Did you get the chance to peek in on that at all?
I always have a trouble with Coastal at the beginning of every season because I just don't know how good they are since they play so many games at home. I just don't know how good they are out of the gate. But when you realize that, one, Levi Wells got bumped up to pitch the first game, and two, they were up 13-0 after the third inning of that first game. Okay, well, there's still two-thirds of that game, and there's two more games that weekend. But that park is conducive to a lot of offense, as we've talked about before. But even that seemed to be – that was pretty noteworthy.
Well, you know, I think we made the comment last week, talked about how is Texas State going to handle the long trip. You know, if you bus it, it's 20 hours. Obviously, they didn't do that. But it's a trip that's like 1,300 miles. And you wonder how they were going to handle it. And the answer was not very well. Now, they managed to come back and get game three. But by that time, by the time the ninth inning of game two rolled around, Coastal had outscored Texas State 32-1. Texas State got five in the ninth inning to make it a 10-6. Or 13-6 final score. But it was 32-1 after the first 17 innings of baseball. Now, you know, we can say all we want to about Coastal, and they play at home and they play in a ballpark that's conducive to hitting. That's pretty damn impressive. And they've been doing this really all year. I mean, you may remember earlier in the season, they played Wake Forest, who's ranked number two in the country. And I want to say they put 15 on them.
Yeah, the one-on-one.
They're scoring a ton of runs. Now, they're also giving up some runs. But, you know, and I'm going to be interested to see when they come to Lafayette in a few weeks how they're going to handle a ballpark that doesn't play like a hitter's ballpark and may have winds coming out of the south and blowing in. I'll be interested to see. But you know what? If you're capable of scoring 32 runs in two games, you probably can hit on Mars.
It seems like this team is what we expected Coastal to be coming into the league. Remember last year, they were a little different. They were very blue collar. They were dirt baggy in a good way. They were grinders. They made you earn everything. They just played harder than you. And it was very atypical of a Coastal team since they won the College World Series. This seems like a team that goes back to maybe that 2019 squad where they had a Zach Bierman who hit, 18 home runs in the tournament the 1 year and helped them win it in Conway. It seems like they're trending more back to that, but maybe they can still have a little bit of the trappings of what they did in 22 when they ended up going to the regional in Greenville.
I know this is one of the games we didn't talk about last week, but Georgia State and App State. I think Georgia State is playing like they've done the last, or at least last year, hot at the beginning of conference. But at the same time, I don't, at least for myself, I didn't expect App State to be playing this well so far. What were your thoughts on their weekend series?
I figured that they would split the first two and they would play for the rubber. I did not anticipate App coming back from 8-0 down in the third game to win 15-14.
That's 29 runs for App State. That's a lot of runs. And I don't know how – I'm assuming they were playing – I think Marshall is playing their conference games at the minor league.
Well, court. No, this was against Georgia State that this happened.
Sorry.
And they were playing at Smith Stadium in Boone.
Yeah, it was in Boone.
Now, Smith Stadium, you know, as far as dimensions go, it's a pretty big ballpark. App State, and I've been following them pretty closely. This is easily the best offensive team that App State has had since they joined the Sun Belt Conference. I don't even think it's close.
Absolutely, now, it is.
I think after their first guy on Friday night, I think that their pitching is very suspect. But this is a team that's scoring runs. They got a guy who's already hit like 9 or 10 bombs this year. And they have shown a propensity to be able to come from behind and win games that turn out to be slugfests. So that part of App State has really impressed me. Now, they haven't pitched very well, and they have not played very good defense. But they have swung the bat better than any App State team we've seen so far.
And that makes me think that not only is it the best they've been offensively, but probably the first time that you'd be safe saying that they don't have to worry about being a bottom four seed.
You know what? I'll be surprised if they are, of course, depending on health and all that good stuff. But they've shown me right now a propensity to really be able to come out and score runs. And, you know, they're only taking 10, okay? Right. Four of them are sitting at home. I don't think App State's going to be one of them.
Jay, did you I don't want to go into it long, but did you jinx Arkansas State after saying last week that they had not had a rainout in the beginning of the season?
I know. I thought about that, as a matter of fact, when all of that stuff was going down.
Why you hate Arkansas State?
That they had not had a game postponed or canceled because of weather, despite the fact that they played the majority of their games at home. But yeah, they got rained out twice. They only got to play one game, and 9-4 was the final, but 9-4 was the final in 10 innings. They actually went extra innings, but dropped their 9th straight game. And, we saw this happen to A-State last year. I still think they're a better club than they were a year ago. But, yeah, that's 9 in a row.
Danny, did you get a chance to see any of that since you were off on Sunday, or were you still traveling?
No, that's a long trip back from Hattiesburg. I'll say that. But the start of the series, when we knew that they weren't going to play Friday and then thought about only one Saturday, but conditions and weather wasn't going to happen. And then to see that not only did it go 10, but they had to come back from 4-1 down late to get to the 10th, and then only to see them score 5. I hate it for that program anytime I see the struggles like that. And it seems like they have a streak like this almost every year where it's at least a couple of weeks where they go without a win. You know how much we think of Tommy Rappo and the program that he has built. But at the same time, with a new AD now, is there a chance that a new direction is expected? They've always talked about improving the Tom. They talk about adding softball. Are these things that finally happen, or do they get hot like anybody certainly can be with 2 months left in the season?
Well, that's a good question, because one of the things that we've always said about Arkansas State is if you're going to get them, get them before tax day.
Yep.
Because the second part of April and into May, this team starts scoring a lot of runs. They start hitting the ball really well. Their pitching gets a little bit better because the climate is better. And then they go out and start beating people. Now, we waited for that to happen last year, and it never did.
Yeah.
And so we'll see if it happens this year. I still think they're a better club than they were a year ago based on what I saw when they came to Russo Park. But, James Madison is one of those teams that I have a question. Are they going to finish in the top 10? And so I thought Arkansas State had a chance to do something this weekend. They play just one game and they drop it next innings.
Yeah, it's tough.
Lastly, before we move on to this week's schedule, I guess it is, if you would have told me South Alabama scores 23 runs over three games, I would have told you the Cajuns would have got swept. But if I would have told you that the Cajuns would score 43 runs over three games, that they would have swept, and neither one of those things happened. Jay, you were there, so was I, but you probably remember more than I do because I was sitting in the stands drinking beer.
I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It should have been a sweep. You had a 6-run lead going into the bottom of the seventh in game one. You had a 4-run lead going into the bottom of the eighth, and you had the guy who leads you in saves coming out to the mound. And then he walks the bases loaded. Now you have to come with Moody a full inning before you wanted to. And 3 inherited runs scored, and then he gives up 2 in the eighth. So it was a very disappointing loss. It was a game that the Cajuns had in hand with 2 good arms. And Marshall, who did not pitch on Tuesday or Wednesday, so he was well rested. Maybe that was part of the problem because it looked like he was overthrowing a little bit. But that is that's a game they should have won. It's a game that I think stuck in the fans' craw, those that were back here in Lafayette and those that were in Mobile. To their credit, they came out and just took it all out on South Alabama the next day, outscoring them 32-11 in the 2 games. And even though you sweep a doubleheader, so therefore you get on the bus feeling good about yourself, the reality of the situation is they should have won all 3.
Danny, I know in your position, like we talked about, you're probably tired and you guys were in your middle of your own doubleheader, but I know you follow all the games closely. Did you have any thoughts on that weekend?
I'll be honest with you. I was out at dinner with our hitting coach, Cody Wofford, who at one time was an assistant for Mark Calvi at South, and we were following up until the top of the eighth inning, and we finished up and went home, and at that point it was still a 3-run game. And then to get back to the hotel and pull up the score and realize that South Alabama won, and you want to wonder how, and pulling up the play-by-play and then seeing some of the highlights, the 2-out, 2-run triple was enormous for them because otherwise they're 0-6 in league play with South Alabama. That's a tough pill for them to swallow. And then the go-ahead single, and then to finish it up in the ninth is one of their biggest wins of the season. But then you lose a little bit of the luster when the doubleheader the next day goes as sideways as it did.
Let me ask you a question, Danny. And of course, I'd love to say that they're closer to you geographically, but really the only thing they are is in the same time zone. Okay. I'm looking at Old Dominion's scores the last 2 weeks. In week one, they have to go extra innings in a 2-2 game to beat ULM. And then they score a gazillion runs the last 2 games. They lose to Marshall in game one, scoring only 2 runs, and then they score a gazillion runs the last 2 games.
Yeah.
I don't know what to make of that. I don't, because this is a team that's been scoring a boatload of runs, but it's not like Marshall and ULM have these overpowering Friday night guys.
Yeah, but what Marshall's guy did was throw 130 pitches. And this early in the season, really at any point in the season, that's a lot of pitches for somebody to even think about, 8 innings worth. It tells me that if they're facing quality arms, then you can get them to a degree. Good pitching can get good hitting, but then they show you how good that they are when the quality of the arm may drop just a little bit. And I think that playing those two teams that they did helps prove that. But if you face somebody that's got some depth, especially from Saturday on, maybe it's a little bit closer to Friday than it is the bombs away that you've seen the last two games, the last two weekends.
And the only series we didn't mention, Troy, after getting swept and getting pounded in week one, they come back at home. They defeat ULM 7-5, 7-5, and 4-3.
Any surprise there? I mean, I know ULM, they're 0-6 in league play, but at the same time, Troy's been blowing people out.
Well, I think that we would all agree that regardless of who is leading that program, the out-of-conference schedules have never really been that strong. They never have been. They never have been.
Well, that's why I couldn't figure out their RPI a couple weeks ago being 7 or last week being 7 or 8. I'm going, where is that coming from? And that might have been Old Dominion's, but they were in the top 20 of RPI. And it's still just – I'm like, who have they played to deserve that?
Yeah, part of it is that you need to keep winning and winning and winning. You need to dominate every – well, maybe not dominate, but you need to just keep winning those games that eventually the numbers will start to go in your favor. But you drop just a little bit. I think they were 11-0 and they lost the two midweek games to Florida Gulf Coast. Now, that's a really good program. They're probably going to win the A-Sun this year. But just a little bit of a slip like that and what you thought was a good situation quickly turns into staring closer to 100 than being closer to 50.
And I think Coach Deggs talked about that in his scheduling philosophy now moving forward. Teams at home.
Well, I think the difference in scheduling this year for the Cajuns, first of all, they've front-loaded a bunch of home games. But the other thing is this. He did a lot of research, and it showed that the selection committee wasn't nearly as worried about what your number was with the RPI as they were about your record against Quad 3 and Quad 4 teams. So if you're playing a bunch of Quad 4 teams and you're playing Quad 4 teams that you're going to beat, it's a whole lot better than playing a couple of those schools from the Southland that are quad four teams, but that are good enough to beat you.
Yeah.
And so I think that's kind of been the philosophy. Now, they lost a game to McNeese, a midweek game to McNeese. As it turns out, South Alabama, that's right now a quad four loss. But you don't have any control about who you play in the league, only who you play out of league. So you can go ahead and you can play some quad fours, but you better beat them.
Danny, any last thoughts on this weekend before we take a quick break and move on to this coming week?
I don't know if we brought it up this specifically last week, but we're not going to know exactly what any of the teams in this league have until we get to at least May. But you get little rewards along the way is to say, okay, this is what your team could be. This is what they're capable of. And it might be a big comeback. It might be taking the back end of a doubleheader where you lost the first game. You might be a couple of guys down. Somebody steps up, whether it's a pitcher, starter, bullpen, or whether it's somebody on offense that just it decides to click. But the little victories along the way, whether it's in the midweek or in conference play, those are the things that you always take note of, because by the end of the season, that adds up and you figure out, okay, are we really a team that is somebody that can be reckoned with in the postseason, or did we just have a decent season?
Jay, any last thoughts on this past weekend?
No, not really. I want the sample size to get bigger before I get to the point where I'm ready to make any judgments about this league, although I've already made a couple. But I want to see a little bit more. I want to see a bit more. You know, we found out during basketball season that if you're good enough to go win on the road, then you're probably good enough to win the league. You look at what has gone on so far in the Sun Belt, okay? You've got Texas State's 13-4 at home. They're 3-4 on the road. Troy is 15-3 at home, 2-4 on the road. Georgia State is 10-3 at home. They're 4-7 on the road. So teams that can win away from home are probably going to be some of your higher seeded teams when it's time to start playing in Montgomery, Alabama.
All right. You've been listening to We're Talking. We've been talking baseball, Sun Belt Conference baseball, with Danny Reed, voice of the Georgia Southern Eagles, and Jay Walker, voice of the UL Raging Cajuns. We'll be right back after this brief timeout.
Any redistribution or reproduction of any part or all of the contents in any form is prohibited, except, who the hell are we kidding? Distribute it, share it, put it in your podcast, broadcast it, or put it on social media. Just give credit where credit's due.